Hey guys, don't forget the 2023 Street Cop Training Conference, Nashville, Tennessee, April 23rd through the 28th. You do not want to miss this. So far, guest speakers, Rob O'Neill, the Navy SEAL that was responsible for killing Osama bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, U.S. Marine, Medal of Honor recipient, jumping on an IED to protect his platoon. Fox News host Tommy Lahren returns for 2023. Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff Mark Lamb, Sheriff David Clark, and more to come. You don't want to miss this event. We additionally have 20 of the country's top law enforcement educators giving you the best experience of your life. You will leave this event knowing more about your job and how to be proficient at the things you do, hands down, any other event that you'll ever attend. I personally guarantee it. Don't miss out. There's a room code at streetcop.com for our room block and room code at the Gaylord at Opry is where the event's taking place. Don't miss out on a discounted rate. The rate is from Sunday to Thursday. Put that in and find yourselves at a half-price room. Split it with a friend, but make sure you get there. You don't want to miss this event. It is going to be that good. If you trust me and you trust Street Cop, trust that you will leave there feeling like you've had an experience of a lifetime.
You trying to be a street cop?
Jimmy Hensel, why don't you tell us about who you are, what you do, and the story of you for the Street Cop Nation?
A really good friend of mine described me best. He said, I'm the stupidest smart guy he's ever met. 20 years ago, my wife leaves me, and I thought I was going to be a professional football player. And I thought that I spent my whole life from the time I was little till I tore my knee up the last game of my senior year, thinking that that was why I was on this planet. And then when that didn't happen, and some of it was my fault, I had been married for a couple of years. There was just complete chaos. I just didn't know which way to turn. You know, I didn't know where to go. I was upset. And then it gets complicated because now my wife of a couple of years, she was somebody that I had known since I was 7 years old, grew up as kids together. She's leaving and she doesn't want to be married. And we've got some small kids, and all that was really compressed into a young age. You know, we were all under 30 when that was all happening. So still kind of developing as human beings, but in that space, just upset, all the emotion that, you know, people could relate to as far as, oh my God, what am I going to do? Why I'm on this planet? I'm not going to be a professional football player. And now my wife's leaving and I've got these two kids that I need to take care of. I just didn't have a freaking clue who I was and where I was going. And then probably clinically depressed. So in that space, as I was trying to figure out which direction to go next, I didn't have like any sort of anchor, you know, I didn't have any way of kind of coming out of that emotion, and I didn't have any way of re-aiming at what I should do next in life. And it was super murky and cloudy for me as it relates to, I had grown up in a really religious environment. So there was a lot of faith and religion kind of things that were mixed up in my head that I didn't know if they were mine or the preacher's or my dad's. So I was fighting. Well, here's what I was doing. I was fighting for my strongest beliefs. In that space, two things that I realized as I began to actually, I was a writer. So I began to sit down in the evening time and just try to be in control of my emotions and write to try to get some clarity. And two things I realized. One, we all feel. That's to be human. The limbic part of our brain fires first. So we're all dealing with emotion. And then the neocortex is firing second. I know this is very rudimentary, but right on target here. The neocortex is firing in second, and it's trying to put language to what we feel. So trying to struggle for all that, trying to get my emotions under control, trying to figure out how to move forward. And then the other thing is that we're all trying to make our biggest choices and decisions in life based on our strongest beliefs. That is also as real as gravity. So in that space, I realized, man, holy hell, I don't even know who I am and I don't know what I believe. Today, I call that identity and values. Those are the two words I'm using when I'm coaching someone. Let's figure out what your personal identity is. Let's connect it to your strongest beliefs. And then let's make sure it's operational in a great routine that's staying motivated, habits, goals, systems, all of that. That's how we can re-aim. The analogy I would use is a great rifle. You got a great rifle, you know, it works. It's a quality rifle. If you don't have an optic, you might as well be just lobbing bullets at whatever you're aiming at. So identity is the rifle, this idea of values, the lens of strongest beliefs, that's that great optic that we practice with. So we can get up and we can daily re-aim. So that's obviously language I didn't have at that point. I'm in this depressed state. You're going to laugh at this part of the story because everybody always does. I pop in a videotape one evening after putting my kids to sleep in the middle of this chaos. And it's the movie Gladiator. It's the scene where Maximus is on the Colosseum floor in front of Commodus. And Maximus, his wife's been killed, you know, he's been murdered, his son's been murdered, and he was a general. And now he's, you know, just a common gladiator. And he's standing in front of Commodus, and Commodus actually thinks he's dead. Commodus has killed his father and usurped the throne. And Commodus demands that Maximus pop his helmet off and define himself. We've all seen that scene. And in that really bad space, I'm watching that movie, and Maximus pops his helmet off and he defines himself. My name is Maximus Aurelius, general of Felix Legions, and he goes through this whole thing. And I hear him say, Maximus, I hear him say, this is who I am, this is what I believe, and this is what I'm going to do in that space. And so that movie, literally, I had decided I wasn't going to listen to another human being. I wasn't going to read any motivational books. I wasn't going to do any of that. I was going to define myself, and I was going to decide, make a solid decision about who I was as a human and why I was on this planet, and then I was going to live it, or I was going under. That's how it was going to work for me. And so I did, literally, I wrote a code for my life. It took me about 6 months, and I memorized it so I could stand in front of the mirror. And it ended up being really powerful. I figured out, I chose what was identity and values for me, and then compressed it so I could say it. And then I memorized it. It wasn't for any other human being. I didn't do this. I would have never thought 20 years later I'd be helping other people or talking to people or encouraging people. It wasn't the goal. I called it the Strength and Honor Code. I had I forget where all my tattoos are. I had a buddy of mine tattoo a crest. I created a crest and I tattooed it on my arm. And every choice and decision from that moment forward in my life went through that purpose statement, those core values, those legitimate core values that I said. I define those words, not what you think or my dad thinks or the world thinks, what I think those words mean. And then the strongest possible language, I wrote it into a mission statement. And my life straightened out. Mm-hmm. And I had to go back to doing a job that I hated because it was one that I could do. My dad was a painter, a house painter. And I grew up painting houses since I was 14. And when I left to go play football at the university, can I swear on this podcast or is that bad?
Rip, dude.
All right. I just want to say it exactly like I said it to him. I told my dad, I'll never paint another fucking thing as long as I live. And I went off to be a big football star. And then when that didn't work out and I come back and I'm in all this chaos, I knew I could start a painting company. And I knew I could do that while being a father and taking care of the kids. And so that's what I did. And I started living this code. And my life straightened out. And then I got myself under control and got my emotions organized and created some tools to be able to deal with the trouble in my life and asked for forgiveness in the places that I needed to. And then realized that my job was not purpose, that my job should be filled with purpose, but it wasn't the reason why I was on this planet. And then I had to figure out how to define that in a different way. Because what if you took my fucking job? Then who was I? And so I worked this job I hated while being able to take care of these kids. And then what I do now, I first started volunteering at a high school and I figured I could help somebody a little bit. And then pretty soon that grew and I was a player development coach at a university. And then it grew to where I had something I was doing on my own. And just over 18 years, it's just kind of grown out of necessity of helping another person define themselves, get clear on your mission, understand what the hell is purpose? And then what are your strongest beliefs? And I think the power in what I do now is it's just a process. I won't tell people what to believe. That's not what we do. The power is it's a process. You or anybody can, if you work the process, you'll get yourself into a position where by the time you're done working, we can take all these ideas about who you are as a human being and we can narrow it to your own code so that it's meaningful to you and you can re-aim on a daily basis. That's a lot. I should stop. I could keep going for like 2 hours and never take a breath.
Well, a good podcast, there's some volley back and forth.
Sure.
So
sure.
I'll interrupt just a hair, but I'm going to go back a little bit. You know, you are this young man, I'm guessing in your early 20s, two children. How old were your daughters at the time?
3 and 5.
And how old were you at the time that your wife decided to leave?
Just middle to late 20s.
Okay. So why did she leave? What happened?
You know, like we're super good friends now, by the way. And I want to make sure that I say that we were super young. We got married and we didn't stand a chance coming from what each one of us came from. So
Right.
I love her and appreciate who she is as a human now. And now if you were to talk to both of us, we'd laugh and say, we're super glad that we didn't have to spend the rest of our lives with each other. Cause you know, we weren't a good match. Let me say it that way. It was rough. It was hard. We had no money, going to school, struggling. I remember asking her and she, what'd you do this for? You know? And she's just like, we don't have anything. We never do anything. I mean, life was hard. And then on top of that, I'm an extremely driven, intense human being. And I'm hard to live with. Anybody and, you know, the women that I've been married to, it can be a challenge for me to understand. And it's something I talk a lot now. How do you turn that intensity off and then just go home and be a good husband or be a good wife? You know, how do you deal with the adversity and what it requires on the job to be a cop or to be a professional athlete, to be a cage fighter and be that human being inside of that space and then shift gears and go home, leave that and go home and sit on the floor and play dolls? And I had to learn all that. And that's a lot about what I help somebody with today, too. So I'm not blaming her. She had her part. I had my part. But it was all young and a huge, gigantic challenge, a lot of responsibility.
When she left, did she just take off or did she stick around and help you raise these kids together?
You know, like initially, no, I got custody of the kids and was really kind of the first couple of years really taking care of them and in the middle of all that. And then, you know, she did come back around and kind of get herself in a position to where, you know, she wanted to be in their lives. And did a good job, you know, and then we were able to work together at that. But I was always kind of leading the way on that deal. And the girls always lived with me and were with me all the way until they went to college. And it's important that when I talk about this, I mean, I hated her with everything inside of me. If I'm just being honest, I used to daydream she'd die in a car accident back in those days, you know, and there's so much emotion and hate and insecurity and worry and fear and all of that going on in my life. And then really understanding what that was and doing the work to forgive somebody and really take accountability for myself. And now today, I mean, thankfully all that stuff's healed and good. Kids are doing fantastic.
Did you have help with your daughters during this time at all? Mother, father, family?
Had the best family. Had a couple of brothers I was super close to and their families. And there's two sets of twins. So I've got a twin sister and I got two brothers a year and a half younger than me. And I never would have made it without my family, without my parents and them, for sure. Didn't do it on my own by any means.
Well, it's good to hear. I'm glad that you had a good support system. And it makes me think about the people that maybe didn't have a good support system in similar circumstances. What did you learn through that experience? And I'll even lead you in a little bit. Looking back at it now, do you think that maybe it helped you understand about other people's situations and have more compassion and empathy because you had experienced that? You had to really understand a good feeling of like, I know what you're feeling because I have been you before in my life. I know exactly where you're at, what it feels like to be you. Is that a fair statement that you think you've gained from some things like that?
100%. The things that I went through in my growing up with my father and my family life, and then what I experienced with that divorce have made me who I am today. And it is the reason why I think I'm good and understand at what I do. I mean, I'm directly speaking from the story of my life. And so, yeah, for sure. If somebody asks, I sometimes get asked, would you go back and do that all over again? Hell no, I wouldn't go back through all that hurt and all that pain and all that. I'm not that kind of a person to say that, but that is what it is. And to go back and do it all over again is not an option. So I look back now to measure how far I've come. That's the only reason why I look back. I'm a man with regrets, but my regrets are not in my present and they're not in my future. I've dealt with those things, and that situation certainly shaped me and puts me in a position to understand and empathize all of the time.
That's a real powerful tool. A lot of people can't empathize and have compassion. You know, I think more people than not don't have that skill. It's a very, very difficult. It's actually it's a superpower to be able to stop and have compassion for what the other side might be going through, and maybe establish a line of communication and say, okay, you know, I never saw it your way, but going through something like that, you know who that person might be because you've been them before. It's important.
100%. Like we all feel, remember I said that in the beginning of this, it's to be human. What would life be without emotion? Love, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat, to feel. I spent a lot of time trying not to feel before I learned about the science later about what I was talking about. And so acknowledging someone's emotion is a really important skill. I didn't say validating. I said acknowledging, understanding that people are feeling. And then it becomes a skill set that we have to develop. You shouldn't be able to see where your emotions and your values, where one starts and one finishes. But unfortunately, lots of people in the society we live in, they're living life because of emotion instead of with it. Two very different kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So gaining that understanding later in life and getting my ego out of the way was a really important part of who I am today in any interpersonal or professional relationship I have.
I think getting your ego out of the way is something that comes with maturity and for experiences, sure. And probably being humbled quite a few fucking times. Nothing like a good 100%. Punch in the dick to get you fucking humbled real quick.
100%. That is my story, face down, depressed, and humbled.
That's a heavy dick punch.
100%.
And I got to be honest with you, I think that I've learned a lot of humility. And I'm so thankful as things progress here at this company. I'm so thankful that I was able to see displays of humility by people who I admired. Maybe in some of the light that people admire me or the training company. But my next question for you is, tell me about the relationship between you and your daughters. And does that relationship between you and them differ between them and their mother?
Yes. Yes. I guess the second question. Yeah. They, they've established a relationship with their mom outside of who I am. And it's cool. And then I think one of the most important things, maybe the most important thing a parent is doing for their children is validating them. And the hard question, am I enough? Sending your kid out into life, really understanding who they are as an individual and where they kind of fit, helping them with their talents. And then for sure as a father, you know, teaching, I had daughters in this case, you know, teaching those two girls that they were enough and that who they were was a good thing, and to be smart and to grow and all of those things. So the relationship with my kids, my daughters, is super tight and the most important thing in my world. And it's interesting now that they're just a little bit older and they've kind of gone out and established their careers. We kind of sent them out into the world. It's now for full circle where they want dad to be around more. You know, we've been separated by states and different jobs and things. But family is a core value of mine. Like some people might say, it is one of mine in my 12 core values that I'm working with. And specifically my relationship with my kids is at the top of the most important things in my entire life.
I'm sure if we asked them if they're proud of you, I'm sure they would say, I could just don't even have to know them. I'm sure they would say we are.
The coolest thing that happens in my world is that my kids are proud of me and that they will tell you that. And on my code, and you know, you don't know me, but if I swear it by my code, that's probably the most important thing I can possibly say. And one of the giant payoffs with the sacrifices that I made as an individual to be there, to work a job I didn't want to work and to make their lives a priority is for sure the relationship that we have now. I get texts from them every other day and it feels amazing to be loved by them and that they're proud of me. And it's funny because I don't really care about really, if my kids are proud of me, that means a lot. I don't really care about anybody else proud of me or not, you know? That's not a driver for me in my life, mm-hmm. But no, they would for sure say that they love me and that they're proud of me. And they would say that they're not who they are today without me. And I'm really proud of that, given that I screwed up so many other things early.
I have a saying, and I coined it recently, and I want to repeat it over and over again because I really want to help guide new parents, existing parents, to some conscious understanding of what their parenting is. And we had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with somebody, and I said, you know, I know I'm a great parent. And they said, how? I said, because every time I go home, I purposely try to be a great parent. Every time I'm with my kids, I purposely try to be a great parent. It is about them. So I'm a great parent because this is the best I can do as a dad. I honestly can't tell you that I could do anything better. And if I do something that I think I could do better, I immediately recognize it. So I know that I'm a great dad. And that's not, you have to understand, this is not a cocky statement. It's what I believe. It's my belief system of who I see myself. Right? I know I'm a great dad because I do things that a great dad should do. Now, I'm not a perfect dad, but I am a great dad. There are things that, unfortunately, for our lives and our lifestyles, they don't look like some other people's families. Like it's a different world for us. The Bonino family experiences things differently, but we work with what we've got, and it's just a little different for us. But were you able to teach them the values that, you know, you've discovered? Are you really seeing that in them now as adults, about the empathy, the compassion, the whys? Are you able to see the work, the time, energy, and effort that you've put into them, and that actually coming out?
Yeah, let me just make one other comment real quick, and then I can tell you about how I did that. A lot of people that I work with, they use the word balance. They're trying to be balanced in their lifestyle. And I don't believe in balance. I think balance means you can be pretty good at a lot of things. And I'm not interested in being pretty good at a lot of things. I want to be world class at a few things. And so balance is a juggling thing for me. And so I want to eliminate that. The word I use is intent or intentional. And so when I'm helping someone work with this idea of defining themselves, I want them to be extremely intentional at what they want to be world-class at. And so being a father, I was extremely intentional about that. Here's another thing that's just as true as gravity. We organize our strongest beliefs or our values in a hierarchy. That's just happening. If I ask somebody what their values are, they can name two or three probably of the biggest ones they're thinking out, and then it gets a little foggy for them. But if you sat down and wrote about it for a little bit, you might be able to come up with a few words, kind of a thing. Well, we want to eliminate that. I want you to be really, really, really intentional about values that represent your strengths, your weaknesses, and your ideals. So not just 10 cool words you throw on a board, but values that are strongest beliefs that actually represent who you are as a human, including your weaknesses and the things you hope to be. So I realized when the kids were little, I wanted to raise them to be critical thinkers. And so I figured out this idea of identity and values for me. And there were certain values that I wanted to teach them as a father. I wanted them to teach. If rules and values are two very different things, they're both important, but they're different. Rules are like a reserve parachute. We need them, but I didn't, we're talking about kids here. I didn't want 50 rules on the fridge written out. So they had to run back and memorize a list of rules. I had some rules, but what I wanted to do was to teach them to be critical thinkers. And so I wanted to teach them what values were and then demonstrate them. So I started with kind, gentle, and generous. That's the first three things I started teaching them. So the rule wasn't don't hit your sister. That wasn't the rule. The rule was what you just did, kind, gentle, or generous in any kind of a way. No, well, then what are you doing it for? Done. Not a lot of rules. But the other thing that I started trying to do was I started to look at each of them as individuals and pay attention to what their talents were, what their abilities were, what I now call identity, and begin to groom that in their life. And they were very different people, although they were sisters. I tried to eliminate my problems. So, for example, the divorce. I didn't want the divorce. I didn't want that to be a problem for them. That's my problem. That's their mom's problem. I need to cut that off. I need to not have the negative emotion from that be something that they have to deal with. They're already going to have to deal with the fallout of their parents being separated. That's already going to happen. But I don't want all that emotion to be in their world. So I worked hard to do that. I picked these introductory values to begin to teach them. And then I started to look at each one of them as individuals. Brittany was one of the most selfish people I'd ever run into. It made her outstanding on the soccer field because she'd keep the ball, she'd turn, and she'd go to goal and shoot. And she played soccer all the way through college because she was willing to do that. Interpersonally, it made her kind of a bitch sometimes because she's just innately selfish. So I started teaching her the value of sacrifice. Mm. Hey, you got to sacrifice. I know what you feel, but you have to sacrifice. You have to sacrifice for everybody, but you're going to sacrifice for your sister. That's where that started. So whatever your sister needs, you're going to drop it and you're going to be there for her. Now, Taylor was a very gracious person. I mean, it was her nature. Brittany's nature was to be selfish and she was athletic. So that's the kind of way it worked for her. It was Taylor's nature to be very gracious and she'd give everything away. As she got older, that hurt her in some interpersonal relationships when she got dating age because she was a kind of a doormat all the time and she wouldn't stand up for herself. So we had to teach Taylor the value of being aggressive and standing up for herself. Very different in each one of those kids' lives. So once again, I tried to separate my ego and what I thought they were born to be, you know, and what I wanted in their world, and started looking at each one of their hearts, each one of their talents, their abilities, and then teaching this idea of values. And then most importantly, sending them out into the world, understanding the value of who they were as a girl or as a woman. And especially as it related to dudes, hey man, don't ever let anybody touch you unless you tell them they can. And in instilling this value in their body and their mind and then in their heart so that they would make great choices and great decisions. And that ended up paying off and they're both super successful. So that's the long answer to, yeah, I started, once I figured this out for me, I went immediately to the most important people, those two in my life, and tried to do that for them.
You spoke earlier about balance. And I agree with that. How you see it, what the intent is, agreed 100%. You know, for me every day, it's like, I gotta play the dials a little bit. It's not, I wake up, it's the same thing every single day. I gotta dial it in just because our life is not as structured in the kind of work that I do. But yeah, I mean, I just play the dials nonstop, but with good intent. You know, you said that you are coaching some athletes and some UFC fighters. Can you go into that a little bit? How did you end up doing that? Who are some of the names that we'd be familiar with? If you can share that stuff. If not, complete respect, but...
The one name I can share because I have his permission is Michael Chandler, who's in the UFC now. Yeah, that whole thing just really grew, man. Like I just started out helping the guy that literally kids at the high school. When I got my life squared away and I got a good foundation and I got me taken care of, I wanted to start to give back. And I thought I was going to go back and just be a football coach. And so I went to the high school that I played at and was, you know, the coach was still there that had been the head coach and said, hey, can I help out? And then I realized instead of teaching defense and tackling, I could help these kids start to sort some of this out for their life. And so it started like that with just kids. And then as that started to grow a little bit and I started to get decent at that, there were places in the community where I started to help out. And then that started to grow a little bit. And I went back to a guy that I played football with in college and he became the head coach at university. And I said, hey, look, we could turn this into a player development curriculum. What I had now, what became a course that I had kind of, I just took the challenges that I faced and then just began to say, hey, here's the questions I tried to answer. Now you answer them. And it turned out that there was 12 of them. So that became the little book that I was working off of. And so, Ernest Collins was the head football coach at the University of Northern Colorado, and he let me come in as the player development coach at that space. And then I got to the 150 dudes became the petri dish that I began to kind of work. Okay, how would I do this? How do I make this work? And so just over time, it began to spread. And from there, it was word of mouth. You know, this guy would come along and he'd tell his friend, he would tell his friend, and just kind of the level of finances started to grow. Now the online school part of what I do, there are people all over the world doing it. And it, you know, technology has allowed that for that to happen. And it just blows my mind, but it was just organic. It just started like that, you know, and you get one high performer and something I'm doing makes sense to that high performer. And then he tells his friend who tells his friend who tells his friend. So it's just super organic.
Who are some of the people that one may have influenced you along this path? Maybe two who continue to influence you and three helped you discover that you had maybe some hidden talents, or were able to grow some entrepreneurial mindset? So I'll leave it at that for that question.
Yeah, the most influential human in my world was my uncle, my father's brother, my Uncle Jim. And he was 100% the most influential person in my life. He was somebody who could, I didn't get along with my dad. My dad and I were very different kinds of humans. I'm going to charge ahead and go fast and not going to listen. And my dad is the opposite of that. Uncle Jim was somebody who he was an engineer, and he was smart and he was capable and he could get stuff done. And I really respected him. And I think he started me. He's the one that I could respect. And then I was driving with him in a car. We were in Loveland, Colorado, and I was driving with him shortly after my wife had left and all this. And I'm bitching and moaning about, and it's all everybody else's fault. You know, my dad did this and my ex-wife did this, and I'm just going off, you know, all the things that, and he was a can-do kind of guy, but he was not emotional. You know, he didn't, and he slammed his hand down on the dash of the car. He was driving it, and he looked at me and he pointed his finger and he just said, "When are you going to accept responsibility for your life, man?"
I love it.
Yeah. And I was just like, you know, and he said, "Because this doesn't get any better until you do." And that was really kind of at that point, the genesis of me, you know, not blaming other people and beginning to turn and look inside and try to fix the many problems that I had. So probably that's the most influential person. I'm really careful about what I read and what I listen to tell you the truth. What you see, what is now the Mayhem Mindset Process is what we call it. That really, I didn't get that out of a book, or I didn't get that through a university education. It's my story and my life and what I went through. So I'm really careful. I'll tell you one person I pay attention to a ton today. And I can only absorb it in chunks because he's so damn smart. And that's Jordan Peterson. I'm honestly not that smart. And I don't mean that in a silly way. I mean, I'm good at what I do. I'm good at the game that I play, but that guy starts talking and I have learned so much from him. And whether you believe like him or not, he's somebody, when he starts talking, I've got to get a piece of paper and a pencil out. And then I literally can't listen to a full podcast because my brain wants to try to chew on it, you know? So probably bookends for me. I've been, you know, my uncle and Jordan Peterson, I've been blessed to have relationships and get to grow relationships with a lot of people who are really good at the things they do. And I get so much from that. I mean, that's the space where, you know, everybody has this cool story and what is purpose for them and how they believe and what they believe is different. It's not a one size all fits all kind of a thing. And so I'm super blessed to get into being spaces where I'm learning something for somebody all the time. I mean, it's one of the best parts of my life.
When I listen to Jordan Peterson and the times that I have taken his stuff in, I often go to one thing and I'm like, man, this guy really is feeling so much. Mm. And I don't even know if he is aware that he's really living really well and in the moment and in tune with the earth, but he feels a lot. It's all I hear about it's a very selfless feel as well. It's not a selfish thing.
Yeah.
He is taking this knowledge and this understanding at a higher level and passing it on to us in, again, digestible chunks where we can comprehend it.
He's for sure. Like, one of the things I respect about him a ton is that you can say whatever you want to say about him, but he believes what he's saying.
That's right.
And what you're saying there for me, the feeling part of it, I'm drawn to, holy crap. I understand a lot of things he's saying. I have some of that same emotion as a dude when he talks about men and how we're wired up. Mm-hmm. And so there's a connection for me there.
For sure, man. That's really cool. I mean, I'm very open, maybe sometimes to my detriment, to a lot of ideas. I'm never somebody who's like, nah, I don't want to do that. If you're like, hey, if we dip our feet in horse shit, you'll live an extra 3 years and you'll have more clarity tomorrow. I'm like, yeah. Well, where do we go? Right. Like, yeah. I'm just one of those guys who's just willing to try things. I'm a meditator. Like, I'm completely comfortable getting a fucking pedicure. I haven't got one in a long time.
Yeah.
I think instead of asking more about your business, and we'll get to the website and where they can find you after this, maybe it'd be fun to do what you typically do with somebody right now to start with, even something maybe in a little bit light stage one with Jimmy Hensel. You could do it with me and see how I respond to some of the stuff. And maybe if I get a little bit of an unlock here, it'll be a real cool display for people to hear, especially our subscribers to the podcast. We have a lot of people listening who I think really get a firm understanding of who I am. I'm genuine. I'm authentic. I try to really, really display and not pretend on here that I'm somebody that I'm not. So what's one of the first things you would ask a guy like me? And again, I don't know how much context you have of who I am in Street Cop Training, what we do. Maybe we should answer that before we start. How did you find us?
Yeah, I think as I've been training, and you know, it's been about a year now, and obviously as a reserve deputy, you're not going to the academy like most guys would. You're getting the training from our training department here. And so it comes in smaller chunks, and it takes a long time to get it all before you get certified. So I started competing in the tactical games events. Have you seen the tactical games online? You know what I'm talking
about? Yeah, I've seen those. Those are cool, man.
So much fun. Two things I wanted to do this past year. I think the guys that I'm coaching, I'm saying to them, where are you willing? A lot of the dudes that I'm coaching now or I'm talking to are successful. And what's happened is they've built these businesses over time, and then they just, what they're doing every day lacks this feeling or sense of purpose. And so one of the things I'm always talking to dudes about is, where are you willing to be completely start over, to learn, to even look stupid, you know? And I've had an AR-15 and a pistol laying around my house for a long time, and I'm not very good with them. So one of the things I was going to do this year was be super intentional about getting really good with those. So in conjunction with this, well, if I'm going to serve and I'm going to support a patrol deputy, and I'm actually going to have a badge and a gun and all of that, and I'm going to get in the patrol car with these guys, and I'm going to go out there and the guys and gals and support them, I should know how to use that stuff. You know, like, it just got super real for me, you know, like, I'm just being honest here, and you could critique me. I know this was your career, but the thought of actually shooting someone, and now we're talking about the movies now, was watching some of the videos that you guys put out and some of the other Instagram accounts put out. I'm like, holy crap, you know, like that's real. That's legit. Like, I don't ever want to be in a space like that and not be able to support the person that I'm supposed to be there to support. And so I started picking up those guns and working with them. And then the tactical games thing popped up, and that's kind of a cool cross between CrossFit and shooting the guns. And so I started working hard at it. And my training partner was a sniper in the military and then career law enforcement. And he told me about you guys. That's how I found out specifically. He's like, now you need to go look at Street Cop, because if there's a group of people who are training and doing kind of what you want to do, that's the people that are doing it. And that's how I got connected to you.
I'm glad that we have a reputation in the sense that people are pointing folks our way. And, you know, I think there's a reason behind it, or many reasons behind it. And I'm proud of those reasons because they are value filled. Mm-hmm. And I think people really understand that and know that about us. But you had a question about the shooting thing. I don't think we got to the question. You said you were going to ask, are we comfortable with shooting? Is that what you're going to say? If we have to?
Well, I think that was the question in my head. My head became, you know, when I took it out of the movies or out of a video and began to actually put myself in real life in that spot, I think if you would have said to me early on, could you shoot somebody? Well, yeah, I could shoot somebody. You come into my house, I'll kill you. You know, like, with no remorse kind of thing. Those are the things I was thinking. You hurt my family, you know, but then the nuance of, as I began to learn the law, you know, all of that, just, it really made it really the impact of what we're doing use of force wise. And then what it means in the culture today, it just made it very real for me and caused me to have to really work hard to really either train and be good with this and understand or move on. Don't do it. You know,
I think most cops, when it comes to the thought of having to do that, have really made peace with the fact that that's could be part of the job. And I think are able to emotionally separate what needs to get done versus what you don't or do, or, you know, you don't want to do. And I don't know of a cop, and, you know, I it's probably a very big statement to make, that went to work in the last, I don't know, 10 years of this profession with the intention of killing somebody. Typically, we are understand that if we're put in that position, it's not that we put ourselves there. We put ourselves there because they respond to the call or agree to take this position. But I probably, and I can't speak to because I've never been involved in it, but it's rare that I find a police officer who'd been involved in an officer involved shooting who had a lot of, I don't want to say regret. Some people have a hard time with the why it had to happen that way, but I think everybody has a real firm understanding that we don't want to do this, but we're willing to do it if it has to be done. And it's to save our lives or the lives of other people. And I think some of the anxiety that comes out of a situation like that, or the thought of having to go into a situation like that, is hopefully the force that we have to use actually works. There's a lot of anxiety with that, right? So people, you'll hear nightmares the cops have and recurring stuff that we're punching or we're shooting and nothing's working, feel very, very vulnerable. So yeah, man, I mean, I wanted to just put that out there so people have a real firm understanding of, like, you know, nobody wants to shoot somebody. Like, nobody wants to go through the bullshit of having to shoot somebody at a very minimum. I mean, I'm not talking about the maximum of, like, having to think about that you took somebody else's life, but the BS that comes along with it, makes us a lot, you know, it makes us have a lot of restraint.
Was I clear? I want to be clear. I said I could shoot somebody, I was referring to, like, the only way I had ever thought about it up till working for the sheriff's department was somebody coming in my home to hurt my family.
Right.
That was the only context.
I kind of stemmed off of that a little bit. I thought it was a good moment to pivot into something where we do have people who don't, or who are not in law enforcement listening to this podcast. And I just want them to give them some insight into what the psyche of a police officer may be. And I'm not speaking for every cop. I mean, but I think a far majority of cops are like, you're going to make me do this.
For sure.
And we're going to have, you can't have qualms about what you're going to do in a situation like that. The decision is going to be clear. We are ready to do what we must do to protect lives, including
in my limited experience now. Like, I worked for an ambulance service and a fire department for 7 years. So as the girls were growing up, I did that part-time and had that job. And I kind of went through something similar in, I started feeling bad that when the tones went off, I was excited to go there, and it was somebody's worst moment, and I was excited to be there. And a lieutenant that was kind of helping educate me at that point was, no, man, you're not seeing it right. Like, we need people who will come and stand up and show up and know what they're doing in people's weakest moments.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Stand in the gap for people. And so I learned that lesson there and learned it, you know, how to mature that in the right way. And then I've learned now, in my limited experience over this past year, I haven't met anybody that doesn't have it right. The men and women that I get to be around in our county are solid. And you know, some of them I like more than others, just like anything else. But I'm around people who I think who have taught me well and who understand what that means, you know, and want to get up and serve and do that the right way every day.
Yeah. And they have intention. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes we see that things are done incorrectly, but it's a lack of training. And I got to think a guy like you, Jimmy, being around those people, maybe some of your best strengths and you could offer them is the mindset of purpose, intention, compassion, empathy. And there has to be certainly a sprinkle of that in the formula of a great cop. And actually what people find is you start adding more of that in, you get a better cop, and a better cop.
The impetus for me was the value of service. And if I'm going to talk about it, then I need to do it. And service became an intent value this past year for me. So I'm going to do it. And for sure, the reason why I know the county and the people that I'm working want me around is that I can be in this space to help. My contribution is a lot to some of the mindset stuff and helping the deputies and the city police officers really understand what is identity inside of the adversity that they face every day. And then how do you transition and go home? My stepson is a patrol deputy here, and he got out of the Marine Corps, and he works in the county, and he's got a young wife and a daughter, our granddaughter. And we've got to have some really amazing conversations about what's that look like when you get home, not because I was trying to tell him, cause he was asking, you know, like, how do I make these transitions? How do I, you know, leave the cruiser and my uniform and all that out in the garage and then just go inside and shut that off. And he runs a dog too. So, you know, how do I get present? I think that's what it comes down to. How can I be where my feet are and be the man that I say I want to be and then be able to make those transitions? So it's a lot about what I'm helping the people that I'm connected to in our community with.
It's awesome, dude. I think there's a lot of value in just saying that here on this podcast, because while we have some people who are not law enforcement, there are a lot of people who are law enforcement who subscribe to this podcast and listen to it. And for statements like the ones you just said is the reasons why they're here. Mm-hmm. They need people who they might not have at their agency or in their lives, giving them perspective that they don't always have to listen to, but if it strikes a chord with them, they can adopt as some of the values of their own. And no question about it, I think everybody in their soul is good, just needed some more guidance on how to be that person who's great in their soul.
Yeah.
You get lost at times. I mean, there are things that I look back on. I had a class yesterday, a very big group. And I said, some of my motivation is for my embarrassment of why I'm out here, because I don't want you to feel what I felt or feel what I feel now at almost 41 years of age. And I'm happy with that stuff. But I'm also, I'm very embarrassed about some of the things that I did, but I was completely misguided. You know, just completely, I was completely untrained, not just misguided, right, but untrained and trained in life. I had no mentors that were the right mentors. What was acceptable behavior was not acceptable behavior. You know, now that I know as an older gentleman with some wisdom and some thought process, but that's awesome, man. We appreciate the men and women who decide to show up on their own accord and time and dime, make a decision, even if somebody's 55 years old, because we certainly could use the help. And I want to encourage everybody who's listening to this that your reserves, your specials, your all these backup that you have, these people who are intentional to come out and help you, man, appreciate these people, right? Don't think that just because they're not full-time or not sworn that they're not one of us. I mean, we had reserve guys and it used to drive me absolutely bonkers that some of the sworn guys would almost treat them like shit. And I just could never understand what the answer was, because they saw other guys doing it, but didn't make it right.
Right.
And every reserve guy that I worked with, we had a lot. They put like, I don't know, it's called 8 to 12 per shift. What else? We're a big agency.
Wow.
Man, I couldn't appreciate them enough. And I had such a good relationship. I'll be honest with you. I was literally one of the only guys that they really, really appreciated, because I constantly told them, I appreciate you guys so much. Right. And bro, they did things for me. And I didn't do that for that reason, but the kindness back from them. But anyway, let's do this thing. Let's do this thing. Why don't you pick my brain a little bit about Jim Hensel? I'm going to be your client. Let's start with me. We'll start little stage one. Where the fuck do you want to go? It'll see what my answers sound like.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Like in 18 years, I have never, I've challenged, you know, a group of people, a room of people to in 30 seconds or less, define yourself. And I know this is not really fair. No, because I call what I do a game and you haven't played the game. So, but I challenge somebody to define yourself. Give me a purpose statement, or talk to me about purpose in your life. Give me values. Can you name 10 core values in your life that really represent your strengths, your weaknesses, and your ideals? And then have you ever thought about codifying it? You know, put that in language that's meaningful, something that you can, the strongest possible language. I usually don't even ask someone in that context. I just say, hey man, name some core values and define yourself. 1, 2, 3, go. And I'll walk into a room of people like that and just point at the first dude, on the front row and say, stand up and define yourself. So if you had to define yourself as a person, do it.
Is it 10 things, or you just want me to define myself how I see myself?
What I'm hoping for, honestly, is can you give verbal account? Here's the word, logos.
Don't let me cheat though. Don't let me cheat.
I won't.
Let me do it raw. I want to see what it comes up with and how it stands the test of the Jimmy Hensel test.
Let me just tell you, here's what we're doing. Here's what we're doing as a human. This is the breakdown of what's going on in your head. The Greek word logos. Logos means to think so you can speak and write to fix the stupid shit you think. But that's what we're doing, right? We think about it. We have to be able to speak it. We have to be able to write it so we can think about it again to fix it and grow. That's the process to be human.
Ask me the question again. Let's try it.
Define yourself. How would you define yourself?
A student for life who has a passion to continue to grow and take everything that I have that I can offer to the world and make sure that by the time is my time to leave, I have no regrets and I did everything to the best of my ability. And I mean that in macro sense, being a father, being a business owner, being a human being to others. and leaving this world, what I think to be significantly better through the actions that I was able to take through facing adversities and not hiding and not bowing down to the anxiety of what it's like to try to take massive action and to have the courage to fight through the things that are challenging at times, knowing what the purpose of what I'm doing is.
Okay. Stop right there. It's pretty dang good. It's pretty clear, right? So in general terms, most of the people that I sit and talk to can't even do that. Mm-hmm. Now, here's what I want to do. Based on what you just said, go back and pick out individual words that would represent a core value in what you just said. Don't make up something outside of what you just said, because this was off the top of your head. I heard words that I would say. Remember, a core value is simply a strongest belief. That's all it is. It's not a magic thing. And what I'm trying to do is help people narrow these big ideas down to one word that's meaningful. So go back into what you just said and pull some words out in one word and label that a value, because I heard some good stuff from you.
Kindness, compassion, empathy, resiliency, drive.
You said student.
Humility. Mm-hmm. Vulnerability. If that's enough for you, that's probably where I'm at.
No, that's good. That's really good. That's what we're looking for, right? Off the top of your head, in the beginning, those are the things we're looking for. You use the word purpose there. You use the word passion. Those are really common words in our culture. What do you think is purpose for you? You said all of that, but narrow that idea down a little bit for me. What's purpose for your life?
Knowing that I could do a lot for a lot of people, had a lot to offer, and I didn't hide it or hold it back. I had the balls to share it.
And now take that statement and drill a little bit deeper. What I'm going to coach someone to do, and this is the challenge we face in our culture. Think about, let's just use law enforcement. Law enforcement, somebody who's done that job their whole entire life, and for some reason, they can't anymore. Either they retire or it's taken from them. And they're completely confused about what is purpose for their life or a sense of purpose. And they're chasing this idea of passion. What I'm doing with somebody is helping them understand that the do, capital D-O, the job or the task, it should be filled with purpose. But if I take that from you, purpose has to be bigger. Purpose is in your design. Purpose is not in your job. It's in the way you're wired. So what I'm really looking for when you say, what is purpose? The clues are more, I want to know about how your heart's wired up and what kind of comes out of you uniquely as an individual, what your talents are. And then I call that your B, just for purposes of defining someone. It's B, capital B-E. That's values, talents, and purpose, and do. Be versus do. Now take it, playing my game, using my terms, drill down to a little bit further to what you say purpose is for you.
Like, I'm one of those people who likes to like really sit and unpack shit before I answer. But I don't know if we have enough time, because sometimes these things come to me, Jimmy. Tomorrow I'll be doing like squats in my underwear in my basement. And I'm like, oh, okay, I have a really good answer for this.
Yeah.
So I know that's not part of the exercise. It's kind of a momentary thing, but it's certainly for me, somebody who's a deep thinker like myself. It's not in the fear of giving a bad answer.
No.
In the fear of missing the actual answer.
100%. So if I could once again rudely interrupt you just to demonstrate, somebody like you who, if you were playing my game, you would end up very clear. You would know. I would work you through this process. And in the end, it would be very clear, be very meaningful. The point of playing this game is to put someone through the exercise. And I can't work with people, like, I want to be clear. What I do doesn't replace counseling. It doesn't replace anything that a psychologist or somebody like that would do. This is, it's a master's degree level education in who you are as an individual. I want to be clear. That's not my job, right? I can't have somebody who needs help getting back to baseline happy or who is struggling in that space. I'm looking for people who kind of know who they are, and it's an opportunity just to get reorganized so you can re-aim.
We're looking for taking your performance and taking it to the next level. And if you don't know who you are as an individual, then how will you know where you fit in your team? If you don't know who you are as an individual, how will you know where you fit in society, your community, your family? We got to know what that is. So it's a perfect example here where you said some really good things. And what I would want to do is help you organize that in a very intentional, powerful way. So that if I ask you who you are, you'd rattle off, hey man, I know right what purpose for me is. Here are my core values. Boom, 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 boom. Not good ideas about it, but intentional. Boom. This is the foundation of my life. And then a mission statement where it's something that's really strong. And that would represent and be done over a 12-week period.
Yeah. One thing that came up to me you triggered was doing the right thing is always the right thing. Mm. We always, always, always do the right thing, even in opportunities when people wouldn't know if we were doing the right thing or not. We always do the right thing. It's not even a, and everybody in this organization that works here knows exactly what that means. And I'm at the point now where they don't have to ask me what I want to do in this situation. The North Star is whatever the right thing is, not the right thing that maybe you, even you think is the right thing. How does the other person see it as the right thing? We are never that selfish where we're going to be not doing the right thing, and you don't have to.
I love what you just said. I think it's powerful. Now narrow that to one word. I love that definition. Now narrow it to one
honesty.
Word. Okay. Now look, now you have, other people would say honesty or integrity all the time. Now you actually have a definition that's genuine and in practice and real. If someone says, well, what's it mean to be honest? Boom. You have that definition that you really own that's yours instead of some slogan that somebody else says that's not yours.
What's yours?
Fight, work, hope, faith, team, family, excellence, purpose, responsibility, love, and freedom. Every year, those are strength values, weakness values, and ideal values. Values that represent the mountains I'm willing to die on. Values that represent insecurities, worries, fears, or negative emotion in my life. It's a clear target to aim at when I'm feeling those negative emotions. I'm committed to responding. As for example, for me, back after my wife left, worry was one of my first thoughts, worry and fear. My life was overwhelmed with worry and fear. Mm-hmm. And so as I wrote my code, I decided to choose hope as my clear target to aim at. Not fake it till you make it, not that at all. Like, as soon as you start worrying and you're afraid, the next thing you're going to do is what a hopeful man would do, regardless of how you feel.
You think hope and belief are similar?
Could be. Hmm. I just defined hope for me in my code, hope as the spring that moves me forward. All right. There's no way out of this if I can't be hopeful about the future. It doesn't all suck. I'm not lost forever. There is going to be another woman in my life. I don't always have to be a fucking painter. Hope. If I can't get up and feel a sense of hope, because I didn't feel a sense of hope, that's not what I felt, then I've got to believe a strongest belief. Think about all the things we have to do that we don't feel that are really valuable. I wouldn't even go to the gym all the time if I didn't believe I needed to be there, because I don't feel good about a lot of that all the time. Mm-hmm. So I realized, all right, hope is my clear target to aim at. And according to my code, according to the code I wrote for my life, I'm going to have the strength to do what is right. Honor is the foundation of my code, and I'm committed to live and anchored to these values. I'm going to represent myself, my family, my country with character and dignity. And I'm going to serve with purpose and with hope. Wasn't bullshit. Hope was the action that tomorrow I was committed to responding regardless of how I felt. So I began, when my first thoughts were worry and fear, I began to exercise and do what a hopeful man would do. And I fought for it until hope became my first response, not worry and fear. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean by using a value and having it be very clear in your life. I go into boardrooms, locker rooms all the time where values are and codes and mission statements are on the walls, and nobody in the room even knows what they are. They're not real. And so they're neat and they're nice, but no one's actually living them. So this process is designed to help you as an individual go back and sort that out for you first as an individual. And then once you've got that down cold and you chose what it is you believe, and it's very clear and it's in language, because if it's not in language, it's not a tool. If you can't say it, then you can't do it.
I think this is a really good thing for, and I'm sorry, I wanted I was looking down and writing. When you say these things about these slogans that are written on these walls in these boardrooms and these locker rooms, it immediately turned my thought into, there are a lot of police cars that have three or four words written on the side. And I'm going to challenge the police officers listening to this podcast to look at what the side of your car says. And do you define what you're representing to society that you serve? A lot of times you're like honor, integrity, service. What I find is there's some hypocriticalness to it, because the people that actually came up with those at the top are complete opposites of what that defines.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have to go far in the police world to find people who are not acting that way, namely typically, and a lot of times at the command staff, but also in the rank and file. So if you're going to drive around with that on your car, look at those words and what do they mean? And it's not some pre-academy bullshit. I really mean that. What you did today, did it represent those words on your police car?
100%. Once again, as an individual, in order to connect to the department or to the corporation or in the Army, all of those kinds of things, we need to make sure that our values, we're actually living them, number one, obviously. And then number two, do we actually believe what the side of the car says? Do we actually believe what if we're going to use, you know, if we're, what the sheriff's office, what the sheriff has to say as far as his values in order for this to work? And if I'm on the other side, if I'm hiring people and I'm developing staff, well, I want to know what their values are so that I'm sure that when I hire you, that our belief system or the vision that I'm casting, that they work well together. Pretty big deal, actually.
Yeah, it's good shit, dude.
Right on.
I had a fucking great time today.
Right on. I appreciate you having me, man. It was awesome.
No, dude, for sure, man. Like I enjoy just having great people on who think like the way you do, because you're the type of people that really are showing up and helping change the world. Maybe not at 16 million people, but certainly it's interesting how contagious perspective becomes. And I think you just provide a lot of good perspective.
Right on, man. I really appreciate that.
It's cool, man. Jimmy, where can they find you? Your website, your Instagram, your whatever you got.
Yeah, if you go to mayhemmindset.com, all the information is right there. And I do pay attention to Instagram a little bit. That's Jimmy_Hensel on Instagram. And yeah, like anybody out there right now, I mean, my major push right now is I'm doing everything I can to get connected to and involved in the first responder world and want to make an impact there. So that's what I'm hoping to get out of this.
I think that we should certainly make sure we stay in touch.
Yeah.
And anytime you have interest in trying to push something that's valuable to them, you're more than welcome to walk into our house and use our platform to do so.
Man, I appreciate that. That's legit.
So, all right, brother, it was great, great meeting you for sure. Thank you again on behalf of everybody being here. And thanks for joining our community.
Thank you.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.